Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
Welcome to Prout Financial Design's New Retirement Radio, starring Mr. Dennis Prout of Prout Financial Design. Good morning, sir.
It is great to be here. Thank you, Ron, in the Prout Financial Design studio, eh?
Hey,
so look rock at that. And roll. Yeah, well, hey. We have some guests with us, not guests, the standard
guests.
The people.
Your status has changed. You're now a guest.
Yes. Yeah.
Look out. So we have Heidi Thompson with us, our ICP in house, and also Managing Executive at Prout Financial. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. It's great to be here today.
It's great to have you with us. And you're going to be discussing the hot topic of the beneficiary form checklist and why that's important. I know some of you may have heard parts of that before, but she's going to be discussing it in some more detail and perhaps some items that you've not heard before as we were going through it for the practice session at our office. It was interesting to hear that again, and lots to discuss there. And, of course, we have also the Shay Pataja.
Hey.
CXO. Hello.
Welcome. Welcome.
Shay Pataja.
The Finn, who sounds Italian, you know?
The Finn in financial. There you are.
The Finn in financial.
It's great to have her here. She's going to be discussing some very interesting stats and also an experience she had out at Sutton's Bay Schule Schools.
Yeah.
Was it last week then that you did that? That
it
you
was
were out
2 weeks ago now.
2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Extremely interesting. She shared as an aside, and I asked her, I said, let's talk about this. So it's good stuff.
As always, we have too much to talk about and not enough time.
We do. An incredible amount. Today, IRA gold. All that glitters is not necessarily IRA gold. Why is this an issue? Now, we brought this up briefly last week, and we did not have enough time.
Time
is slipping away, mm-hmm. if you know what I'm saying. So as Section 408M3 indicates, if gold coins or bullion are to be held in an IRA, they must be held by a qualified trustee or custodian. So if the people that you're talking to from the connection on the internet are saying you can hold gold in your safe at home, you can hold it there. Just
hand.
It can't be in an IRA. I'm sorry, that's not going to work. And if you do hold it at home and you think it's in your IRA, you're going to get a letter from the IRS that you're not going to like. Okay? Dennis is telling you. All right. It's not going to be a happy time. And I actually have an actual example here.
Let's hear it.
So,
is this a story?
This is a story.
Good.
The recent McNulty tax court case tells of a woman who wanted to invest, and nothing the matter with this, in coins, U.S. coins. Donna and Andrew, to be sure, McNulty, lived in Rhode Island. Donna was a nurse and Andrew was a manager at a plant that manufactured sails for boats. So, everyday people, mm-hmm. if you will. In 2015, the McNultys became interested in alternative investments for their IRAs. Doing her own online research, that's the first problem, right?
Ruh-roh.
Donna came across a website for a company called Checkbook IRA. During 2015, rather, Checkbook's website advertised that an LLC owned by an IRA could invest in American Eagle coins. Well, it can. It can. And IRA owners could hold those coins. This is where it's wrong. The and. Circle the and in this. And IRA owners could hold those coins at their homes without tax consequences or penalties. Well, the end of the story. Let's just drop down to the end, shall we?
Okay.
For Donna, that meant sizable distributions of $374,000.
Ouch.
And $37,280 for 2015 and 2016, respectively, because she, in essence, had taken that money out of two different, an IRA, two different tax-qualified accounts, an IRA and a 401k, thinking erroneously that she could hold that gold at her safe in her house through an LLC. And, oh my gosh, we're talking, let's just give it an average of 25 to 30% in tax on that money. And it doesn't say here whether or not she was 59 and a half, which could include then a 10% penalty. So we can just say that the penalties and taxes would have amounted to $100,000, $150,000 maybe, just because she took the money out of her IRA to hold it in the gold coins in her safe at home. So you can, no kidding. You can own these things within an IRA, but you have to have an IRA trustee. There has to be two components.
I wonder why she took them out.
Because she was told that she could own them outside of her IRA through an LLC and hold them at home in her safe versus holding them away, if you will, through an IRA trustee.
Maybe she felt she had a more security if she knew right where they were in her safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
she may well have.
Yeah.
But in this case, obviously, it didn't work.
No.
So properly holding gold in an IRA will not come cheaply. Just going back a bit, how do we do this then? So if we can't hold it at home, and I want some gold in those hills, you know, in the IRA, fees are typically much higher for an IRA holding gold items. The good news is that once an IRA custodian willing to hold gold investments is identified and the IRA invests in acceptable coins or bars, the IRA itself won't be much different from any other IRA. The gold items will be generally of standard size and easy to value by looking at daily gold prices. Now, you are limited as to the type of coins that you can own inside of that IRA.
Correct.
They have to be denominated through the federal government, generally American Eagles, that sort of thing. Mm. Gold coins minted by the federal gov. All right? Now, what's interesting, you can also own stocks of gold mining companies or shares of a precious metals fund. Another possibility is an ETF, an exchange traded fund, that can own either silver or gold. So there's a cornucopia.
Right.
The word of the day, shall we? The cornucopia, of ways to own gold. Just own it right. You have to have your mind right, Luke. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That goes way back. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so if you don't want a deal.
I'm not going to recognize that statement. But for those my age, yes, you will. Sorry, Heidi. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you don't want to deal with the complexity of do I have the right coins and do I have the right trustee, you could maybe turn to, like you said, you can still be involved in the precious metals market, but maybe you're buying stock or you're buying ETFs or you're buying mutual funds or something that's underlying assets are also in the same sort of investment.
That can easily be held in an IRA trustee that you know their name. It's like, yeah, I've heard of them before. And it generally, I can't even say, you know, if you know of them, they can hold it. And I can't use a blanket statement anywhere anymore. But if it generally, you're going to be able to hold it through that IRA custodial trustee. Okay.
And you could also, like, just not use your IRA money. You could just use non-qualified money, maybe some savings you have if you wanted to invest in coins and avoid that rule.
A great point is that you can still hold it, the IRA, you can still hold the gold or the silver in your basement, if you will. Mm. It's just that you need to hold it personally. It's personal with me. So just own that asset I like to pull it out once in a while and take
just,
a look at
and
my
just
gold.
Admire it.
That's why I wondered if the lady took it out so she could like take it out, look at it sometime.
Wow, you know, that's a lot of gold.
I have her friends over, come here, let me show you something.
But she also dressed as a pirate every Halloween.
Yeah, yes. Well, you know, she wanted to act the part. But if you want to own it that way, just own it outside the IRA with regular money, as Heidi mentioned. Mm-hmm. Don't try to own it within your 401k. Not a good deal. Okay.
By the way.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Gold, I just happened to look at the gold that's on the march in the last 2 weeks from a low there, 1785.70 up to almost 1900 now.
Yeah, overall. Now if you would go back to 6 months on that little graph there.
Oh, right, look at that. There.
Yeah, that's looking very interesting indeed. And of course, when we're talking about it on the radio, warning, the price may well come down at some point in the near future. Okay, so it can be a very volatile asset.
Yes.
Always keep that in mind when owning such things as precious metals. And I know a fair number of folks out there who own silver and gold because they are concerned about how much our FedGov is borrowing. And Ben Franklin had something to say about it in an indirect way. We'll listen to his quote, maybe, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And then take our break.
Okay.
Here's what he said. We can say this is probably about 250 years ago. Ben Franklin, if you can't pay for a thing, don't buy it. Hmm. If you can't get paid for it, don't sell it. Do this, and you will have calm and drowsy nights with all the good business you have now and none of the bad.
How about
Ben
that?
Ben Franklin.
To keep it simple.
I think he was our country's first millionaire.
He was.
Was he really? So you confirmed that.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Yeah,
but he never got like those solicitations in the mail from credit card companies.
Yeah.
Easy for him to say.
Yeah.
Oh, my great uncle Bert. God rest his soul. He was a quirky man, but he went through every piece of junk mail, and he read every single piece because he was convinced that some of it might be great advice or worth it. But we would find him, you know, we'd all stop over and check on him, and he'd be there, you know, with his glasses and his magnifying glass and a lamp, going through every piece of that junk mail. And we're like, Bert, you can throw that up. No. He was not going to.
Publisher's Clearinghouse.
Yes, it was not going to happen. Yeah. It would be read.
So Heidi is talking today about beneficiaries and what's going on with this, eh?
Yeah, so we thought it might be a good time to check back in on that beneficiary checklist. But before I jump into the checklist, let's talk about why. Why do we keep coming back to this and talk about this? What can happen if you don't have one? So what are the stakes involved, right? So what happens if you don't have a beneficiary? Your IRA becomes part of your estate. And that means it has to go through probate. Mm-hmm. And a second reason maybe is that if you don't have a designated beneficiary, it can limit the benefits that your heirs actually receive due to taxes and other issues. So there are some ramifications of just saying, well, I don't want to bother with it or whatever. It's important to take a look at. One reason is how does that affect it? Is the reason that when you take the money out as a beneficiary, if you're getting it through the estate, you have to have all that money out in 5 years.
Well, so, that's obviously a big difference here because if you've properly named them, then the minimum you have to take it out is 10 years, not the five, right?
Right. If you're not an eligible designated beneficiary, which those people have a lifetime to spread those distributions out from a inherited IRA, others have 10 years according to the Secure Act, but no beneficiary means there's only 5 years. So you have to take out maybe larger sums.
So do you have to pay full tax on that then?
Yep, it would still be counted as income. So the larger the IRA, the bigger impact on your taxes. You could jump yourself up one or two tax brackets if you had to take out that huge lump sum in bigger increments.
So. Yeah, your beneficiaries will have to jump up in those brackets because, you know, obviously if the account is 10 grand, well, we're not really that concerned about the tax implications. But when it grows to 200, 300, 500, a million, all of a sudden the reality becomes much more clear.
And we see more and more of those sizes of IRAs, people rolling over 401k balances. Mm-hmm. So it's not unheard of to have these large sums. And it can really impact how much the heir gets as opposed to how much goes to taxes. So that's just one reason why we focus in on this topic time and time again. Mm-hmm. So let's turn to the checklist. So one thing to look at is life events. Life events, you want to look and think, the last time that you filled out that beneficiary form, have you gotten married? Has there been an adoption or a birth or a death or a divorce? This all changes who you may want those funds to go to when you pass away. So you want to sort of put it through that life event filter and say, has anything happened that I would want to change what I from my previous designations? Because you can change beneficiaries at any time. You can have as many as you want. So it's flexible in that way, but you actually have to fill out the form.
Well, and that's the last thing on people's mind. Like, oh, I need to go check my beneficiary forms. I mean,
right.
Well, who thinks of that? The well, big stuff is happening. Not many people. I wouldn't. That would not be my first thought.
Yeah. Well, Shay, that brings me to my next point on the checklist. Do you know where the forms are?
Oh.
Do you have a copy?
Whoa.
Does your financial advisor have a copy? Do you know where to find it? Because if it is lost at the custodian or they don't have that information, it never got put on the account, you want to have a copy of that document so that you can submit that.
And what's interesting about that is the critical importance of not only naming primary and contingent beneficiaries on those accounts. Obviously, if one of the primary beneficiaries has passed away, then the contingents may come to the fore, if you will, in terms of them inheriting. So if you've named them both, you have an immediate way to surpass the issues that might arise as a result of having missing a primary beneficiary in that case.
Right. What, and I'm sorry, Ron.
Well, what if your primary is a minor, like say a 10-year-old?
Well, if your primary is a minor, then it's going to have to be a guardianship in the end. So that's where you may want to consider a trust, depending on the size of the IRA. Or understanding that, well, we've named the guardians through our wills, and we're happy with that child getting those funds at age 18. So you see where the two issues can be. It's not only 10, it's also the age of majority, which can, for some, be quite young still. You know what I'm saying? He knows what he's saying?
Well, okay. It's also another good reason to name a guardian in some kind of, in your will or trust for your children. Yes. So you know the person who's managing the money for them on their behalf.
You see, as these funds grow, you're creating problems for those that follow. There could be worse problems to create, right? So given the reality of the problem, why not just plan for it and say, you know, what can we do? Now, no one likes thinking about death and money, do they?
Nope.
But what a great plan to at least try to get through this so we can help them. Go ahead, Heidi.
Right. Another thing that you want to do is you want to check and make sure that things go together. Does your trust say the same thing that the beneficiary form does? Does your will say the same thing? Because the beneficiary form for an IRA or an employer plan, they're always going to go with the beneficiary form. So if you think it's a certain way because you put that in your trust or your will, you've got to make sure that the beneficiary form says the same thing because it may not happen the way you anticipate.
If you don't like what the beneficiary form says as a beneficiary, you're out of luck. The beneficiary form prevails over all of those things. Now, obviously, you can have a will contest and court and all the rest, but those beneficiary forms are pretty powerful and not likely circumvented in terms of who has been named.
Yep. And then our point, another point on the form is the beneficiary form should name a person, not an entity, as a beneficiary unless the retirement assets are being left in whole or in part to a trust or a charity.
Excellent point. Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting about those things, if you do decide, and we've talked about this before, but it's worth saying again, if you have charitable intent, the IRA or other taxable tax qualified account may be the best money to give to that charity on your death. And you can give, generally you're going to want to set aside that IRA so 100% of it goes to that charity for clarity's purpose. You don't have to, but name that charity as a beneficiary in the account, and that money then is never taxed. Think about this. Well, I grew that IRA over 30 years. I put that money in tax deferred. I didn't pay tax on it when it went in. And then when it's drawn out by the charity, no tax is paid on that money.
But so you can't just list the charity as your beneficiary. You have to have it in a trust, Heidi?
No, you can list the beneficiary, the charity as a beneficiary. You can say, like, I want 10% to go to this charity. And that's great. That works as well. But there is a little bit of a helpful hint that you can do, which may make it easier for some people. You know, not all your money has to be in an IRA that's in one account. You can have multiple accounts that are registered as your part of your IRA or as an IRA. So if you wanted to put a select amount in a separate account and just say that's the money that's going to the charity, that works as well. If that helps you with organization, and that's one of the hints on the form, is if you want to, you can have multiple accounts, and this one goes to this charity, this one goes to that charity, or you can just use the percentages or certain dollar amounts you can name as well.
Talk about putting leverage and power behind those IRA accounts where previously you thought, well, maybe I didn't have that option. It's amazing what you can do. And if a primary beneficiary doesn't want to receive those funds, he or she, and they want to go to direct to the charity, let's say the charity is the contingent beneficiary in that case, he or she could then, in this case, bypass that, let it go by them. They could disclaim, I was thinking of the word there, disclaim their sum and have it go direct to the named contingent beneficiary in that case. So that's where you get some real power with these things.
That's correct. And just another little helpful hint is the percentages have to equal 100. So make sure your math is right.
Yes,
that helps as
looking,
well.
Yeah, have someone looking over your
shoulder. So I want 90% to go to my son and the other 50% to my favorite charity.
Exactly. That could be a little bit of a pickle.
Hmm. Somehow that doesn't work. Now, as Heidi was talking, and I see the EdSlot insignia there, I think. Now, that's why we're sending four of our staff to EdSlot's class. Four of them. Obviously, it's not cheap, but they go through those sorts of things, and they get to hear all this and drink that special Kool-Aid there at the EdSlot class. So they're gone for a few days, but we're happy to have them leave in this case, you bet.
You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
And I'm the other financial advisor, Heidi Thompson.
And I'm Shay Pataja. I put the fun in financial.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio with Dennis Prout, Prout Financial Design, Heidi Thompson, and Shay Pataja. You know, I think they need to add on to that intro there and say, and I'm Nathan on bongos.
That's great.
It definitely has a good bongo line, doesn't it? You betcha. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. By the way, we certainly appreciate you who are listening. We love doing this show. It is a rebroadcast as well on Saturday, if you do happen to be listening then. And we love prepping for it. It helps hold our feet to the fire on what's going on out there. And again, your questions are welcome. Before we get to the Shay stats next, which is next, Shay told us a story of her own experience going out to Sutton's Bay to help these high school children, if you will, connect.
Ooh, young adults.
Young adults. Connect. Mm-hmm. And could you share what happened out there and what that was like?
So for a little context, most listeners know that I'm a life coach. That's my side hustle that I'm very passionate about. And part of that is public speaking. And Casey Petz, the superintendent out there, is a good friend of mine. And he's a very, very smart guy. Mm-hmm. And he had me speak to the faculty at the beginning of the year to coach them on how to connect after the summer off and the pandemic. And, you know, it's just a very difficult for all of us to get over the hump. It's just hard to figure out how to do that anymore. And so then he invited me out for their high school assembly. And I graduated from Sutton's Bay in 1998. And I said, what do you want me to do? And he goes, I just want you to do what you're best at, which is connecting, and teach them how to do that. And so the goal for that was not to get up there and talk for a long time. Nobody wants that. But to actually create an exercise that would help them connect. But before that, and what I explained to them, and I think it's relevant information, not just for the high schoolers, but I mean, I could take this show on the road, so to speak, and talk to adults and junior hires and elementary school kids, is that, you know, cell phones, I was introduced to cell phones during a career day at Sutton's Bay Schools my senior year. And do you guys remember Nextel? They were like a big, they were a big company back then. They were one of the career day breakout sessions, and they said, you know, in 10 years, everyone will have a personal cell phone and landlines will be obsolete. And I leaned over to my friend and I said, this is never going to happen, you know. And I was also introduced to Google at Sutton's Bay. So, like, it was very fun to go back and talk to the school. But between cell phone usage, quarantine, and then the masks, it is increasingly more uncomfortable for us to connect with each other and try to read faces and understand what's appropriate, and all for good reason. It's been a wild 2 years. But some of the findings I had in my research is that we spend a third of our waking hours on our cell phone. So the United States, we spend on average 4.2 hours a day browsing apps. Okay,
that's a lot.
And apps make on average $320,000 a minute off of our usage. And so I was trying to explain to the students that phones are meant to be addictive. That's the design. But they're also a tool. So they're not 100% evil. They're a tool for connection and how do we connect with each other again. And in fact, the research shows that 70% of the reason we use phones is for connection. And since 2019, our phone usage on apps has gone up 30%. 30%.
Just since 19.
Yes.
Wow.
So I had a fabulous time out there speaking to the students, watching them interact, getting them to talk to each other. So
hold on just a minute. So if you would, share what were you in a classroom when you had that interaction with them?
We were in the auditorium.
Okay. So you're in the auditorium, and share what you shared with us in terms of your interaction with them and what you asked them to do. You said right off the get-go.
Yeah, so I explained all this to them, and then I just said, so what we're going to do right now is we're going to actually connect. And a few of them yelled, no. I mean, just the how uncomfortable it is. And teachers had to participate as well. So this wasn't just students. But I had a Q&A exercise that got them to mingle and talk to each other and learn about each other. And they did this for 20 minutes and I had to like cut it off because once they got into the mode of it, they were totally into it. And I just love, my dad was a youth pastor growing up and he's also a builder. But during my high school, junior and high school years, he was a youth pastor at Faith Reformed Church. So I even went to school to be a youth pastor. That's how I started my career. So I really love working with kids, and I think they're fun, and I like that they're saucy, and you know.
So they, you said, no kidding, you said they had a real problem taking off their masks.
It was very uncomfortable.
And working through that.
Well, and they can't right now. There's still the mandate for schools, so they can't. So I was teaching them how to interact, how to talk to each other, and I can't wait for. I know that we've needed to do this, and I'm not saying that that's not appropriate, but I really can't wait for the mask to come off so that people can see each other again, talk to each other again, and read faces. And I, you know, because even when you're speaking in an auditorium, you know, I can't really read a lot. I can't get a total expression. And so the barriers are there, but the good thing is that we were designed to connect, and our limbic system needs connection to survive. And if this has shown us anything, living in isolation, living apart from each other, not being able to meet your financial advisor in person or your doctor, I mean, all these things, seeing people in person and having that energy connection is very important, and it's vital to our survival as at any age. So yeah.
I'm very passionate
about the topic.
That's awesome, and thank you for sharing that with us, because that's going to be key. You know, for us, can you imagine? Obviously, we know what it's been like, but for those high school students, man, when they live with that, they need that interaction more than us, I think. So that's my own personal opinion.
Students have had this for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Right, and they've missed out on so many things that are important things that you remember in high school.
Yeah.
Dances and homecomings. And, I mean, I'm so impressed with the creativity and the determination and how adaptable students have been. But I think we're starting to see the effects 2 years later on the mental health of teens and families. It's just been too much. And so
let's get going back on the positive, shall we, and start making that happen.
Yeah,
I'm glad you did that, Shay.
Quick question before we do Shay stats.
Yeah.
From the text line, what happens to a divorce situation where the beneficiary is not updated? So one spouse leaves, the other spouse is the beneficiary, but then they split, divorced.
Yeah, now depends on the retirement account. If it's a 401k, the 401k rules are different than those in IRAs. 401k will go with ERISA rules, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. So that is very stringent. The current spouse is the beneficiary, regardless of whether or not you've named him or her as that on your retirement account, unless that spouse has, in essence, disclaimed through the appropriate forms the spouse signed off, all right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, the beneficiary form prevails. And in IRAs, in an IRA, the beneficiary form prevails regardless whether or not the current wife is named.
But you said the current spouse, but if you're divorced and no longer married, it still goes to the...
Whomever is listed or named on the account.
Right. We go back to those life events when they happen. Mm-hmm. Don't forget about the beneficiary form.
Isn't that a great question?
Number one thing on the checklist, life events.
Update that dude. Mm-hmm. All right. So, Shay Stats, do we have time for those before we... Okay, let's do that.
Looks like we do. Okay, ground was broken in the United States on the construction of 111,600 single-family homes in June of 2021. That's the largest monthly total nationwide since September 2006. So the 1.12 million housing starts in all of calendar year 2021 was the largest U.S. total reported since 2006, and that's the Census Bureau.
Yeah, that's just about when the housing market was at its pinnacle previously. Mm-hmm. You bet.
Electric vehicle sales globally increased by 112% in the calendar year of 2021, rising from 3 million to 6.3 million worldwide, and that's from Benchmark Mineral Intelligence. A food price index that measures the change in food prices internationally was up 19.6% on a year-over-year basis as of January 31st, 2022. And that's the Food and Agricultural Organization of the UN. Hmm. For every $1 of goods that the U.S. companies exported to Chinese buyers in 2021, American consumers imported $3.35 of goods from Chinese manufacturers.
335% difference. We'll just say it that way, right?
Department of Commerce is where that comes from. An average American worker has increased his or her productivity by 52% in the last 22 years. An average worker can complete in 1 hour 58 minutes the same amount, this is as of December 2021, the same amount of work that it took him or her 3 hours to finish in 1999, and that's the Department of Labor.
That's computers.
Isn't that incredible, eh? Yeah, thank goodness for those deals.
There's your Shea Stats.
Thank you, Shea.
Shea Stats. One other late-arriving question. Let's see, I'm about to receive an insurance policy death benefit from my mother's recent passing. Will the state tax me on that?
No.
No? That, life insurance not taxable, right?
Tax-free from a life insurance policy. Indeed. You bet.
Well, that's, somebody likes that answer, it sounds like.
Yeah. Life insurance proceeds are 100% tax-free. Hmm. 100% tax-free to those who receive the life insurance benefit or proceeds from those policies.
All right. We have a few minutes before we have to say goodbye. Any final thoughts there, Mr. Prout?
Yeah. Shea was mentioning at the break, for those who want a to-do list, if you will, in regards to these IRA beneficiaries, what would you recommend, Heidi? How does someone handle this if they're concerned about, you know, have I done this properly and or is it up to date, the beneficiaries?
Well, just check with either your custodian, that's where your account's at, or you can check with your financial advisor and say, who do I have on all these accounts? Some will even have it on your statement, like who your beneficiary is. But do a little research and find out. And you can always, if you can't figure it out, you can always request a new beneficiary form and fill it in the way you want and have that be the most recent copy. And keep a copy before you send it back in, and you'll have a form on file.
That's right. That's why when clients come in, we have a beneficiary page that shows who's the primary and who are the contingents as well. A significant part of that. So how much time do we have here, Ron?
3 minutes.
Awesome. Let's do this. So if you want to name a trust as an IRA beneficiary, well, when would I do that? If you don't trust, generally, if you're concerned about the children who would receive the funds, they're a little young, not quite as experienced as you might like, and or they might be unduly influenced by those in their lives at the time. That would be, you know, a couple. Another one might be, well, they shouldn't receive any because they're learning disabled or whatever, they have other, some kind of a learning disability issue that would prohibit them, or a special need issue that would prohibit them from receiving the funds. All of a sudden, getting a lump sum, not a great idea from an IRA, okay? That's where a trust can be extremely helpful.
You would do a trust with an attorney. Does the attorney work with someone like you? Do you work with trust attorneys when people are setting those up?
Absolutely. Okay. So thank you, Ron, for mentioning that. So only an attorney can draw up these documents properly, as they should be. And it's important that an attorney, I think, be involved, especially locally, because if those who follow need to consult with somebody, they want to be able to call a live person instead of try to get on the internet and, you know, figure out what it is you were doing. Mm-hmm. It's a really poor disconnect.
Especially if it's a surprising situation. People are in too much shock to think straight and figure out what to do next. So having someone and letting them know where to go is really important with your team.
So in this particular article, the name of the article is IRA Trusts Should Be Irrevocable or Irrevocable, depending on how you like to pronounce that word. It goes either way, according to Miriam. It should be irrevocable, simply meaning then it's not your IRA not being subject to lawsuits, which is another issue which we don't have time to go into here. So next week, we'll discuss this in more detail and have more financial information for you.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.